A legal education means you will learn to speak in a new language. You will be taught to achieve insight into the world around you and to sharply question what you know.
You can't handle the truth!
You're out of order! You're out of order! The whole trial is out of order!
What are you doing, detective? What are you doing talking to my client without me present? You sneaky Pete!
Lose! I don't lose! I win! I win! I'm a lawyer! That's my job! That's what I do!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Comedians at Law podcast. I am your host this week, Matt Ritter, and with me for the first time as one of our co-hosts is Matt Storrs.
Howdy, how you guys doing?
He's all grown up. Our boy is all grown up. He graduated law school.
Yeah, they tell me I did.
They tell you? Did you get a diploma?
I did not. I got a nice little placard that said, "We will mail you your diploma when it comes in."
Yeah, I never understood that. Why can't they just have the diploma ready when you graduate?
I think it's something to do with, like, for instance, I'm still waiting on grades for my last couple classes, so I think they don't want to give you the diploma until you know you have those classes passed. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. You don't want to give a diploma to some guy who's flunking out, and then he's got that diploma up on his wall, and you know it's bringing shame upon the university.
Exactly. Yeah.
Do you know anybody that didn't graduate?
You know, I don't know. I know plenty of people that didn't pass the bar, but I don't know anybody that did graduate.
Hey, what do you think about us doing sort of a Comedians at Law bar watch with you?
Yeah, I'd be down with it. I was actually going to bring that up with my articles. I figured that more towards the time of the bar, it would get into a... this is the reflections of a bar sitter.
Yeah, I think it'll be like watching you descend into madness, you know?
It's exactly,
like
a, yeah.
It's apocalypse now.
Yeah, it's apocalypse now. There you go. Yeah,
the
perfect.
Bar edition. I think we should start doing that. Are you feeling a little panicked yet?
Actually, not really. It's like the fact that I'm not panicked and like seeing my friends get panicked is making me kind of like anxious.
Well, I think this is the perfect time to start it, that because you're perfectly sane right now.
Yeah.
And we'll get to see the juxtaposition between your blogs now and 2 months from now when you lose your stuff completely.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do, ladies and gentlemen. We're announcing it here and now. When Matt Storrs blogs on Comedians at Law, it's going to be his descent into hell.
Yep. That's.
And that we've got some other news about shows that are coming up around the corner. June 8th, we're going to be at Brick 46 in New Jersey. So that's pretty soon. I think that's next Saturday. Is that right? Next Friday?
It's the what day is it?
The 8th, June 8th.
It's next Saturday.
Next Saturday. So if you're in New Jersey or near New Jersey, come check that out. And if you're in the city, June 21st, we're going to be at Gotham again for our monthly show, the charity event / comedy show. So, you know, it's for a good cause, the Gotham Charity Foundation. And that's at 8 p.m. on June 21st. So I really hope we get a good turnout for that. We're really pumped about that.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. Most definitely.
Yeah. And, we started to reach out again for our 2013 schedule to all of our law schools. Seems like we've gotten a ton of responses. So it looks like we're going to be out on the road again a lot to law schools this fall. So if you want us, you know, tweet to us, email us at comediansatlaw@gmail. Talk to your SBA. Get us on the calendar. You know, we're a pretty good deal. We're way better than any guest lecturer that they're going to be wasting money to come see, I think.
Yeah, as a recent graduate, I can tell you I would have very much rather had something like the Comedians at Law come in than many of the guest lecturers that we had at the school.
Oh, many but not all? Was there one that you think is better than Comedians at Law?
Well, there was like the stress management ones, and I think that's really been helpful thus far.
What's a better stress management than laughing?
That's a good point. Well, you know, Yeah, I guess that actually is probably the best one. The only other suggestion that they made was like meditating. The meditating, I don't see that really working too much once the bar exam comes around. I don't think alms are really gonna, let me, they're gonna let me do alms in the in the room.
No, you should take bathroom breaks and meditate. I think that's actually a good method.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I think you got to get your meditation in. But listen, I think meditation is definitely helpful during a bar study. Whatever it takes, every individual has their own sort of calming method. If you need to punch through car windows to just keep yourself calm, then that's what you got to do.
Yeah, bending, bending frying pans, whatever gets it out.
Whatever gets it out, whatever gets you ready for the bar. So, good luck to you. We're going to
Thank
chronicle
you.
that, and that'll be exciting. Should we jump into some news stories?
Absolutely.
Since when has the paragon of investigative journalism allowed lawyers to determine
Set up
news
the
content?
first story.
Yeah, I was checking this out this week. I guess in Indonesia they haven't ever updated, well, at least formally updated their criminal code. So their legislature is in the process of updating it and has some really weird inclusions. It's a 200-page document, but it has a ban on sex outside of marriage, a ban on black magic or offering black magic services, and it also has a ban on criticizing the government about anything in the criminal code.
Wow,
Yeah.
I don't know which of those to attack first. Obviously, I'm against any restrictions on sexual activity whatsoever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just wrong, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, just my code, my moral code says that that code is wrong.
Absolutely.
But so is this I mean, is this a marked shift for them in some way?
Well, I guess they're an Islamic Muslim country, so they're trying to get more moralistic criminal code. Like I think that one of the main problems is they were colonized by the Dutch, and I don't know how many Dutch people you've met, but the criminal code I would assume was probably pretty lenient.
Yeah.
I think that I think there's a pretty stark contrast between the two.
Yeah. I thought the best line in the article you sent me was there's a 33-year-old woman who disagrees with this, these stricter laws. She lives alone in Jakarta, Indonesia, the capital. She said, we're not Malaysia. No, she said, we're not Malaysia. We're not Saudi Arabia. She's referring to countries that have enshrined Islamic law. Doesn't the government have better things to do? I like that. I like that she's like, we're Indonesia, for God's sakes. We only are slightly insane with our criminal code.
Yeah, it's like, what are you guys doing? And the best thing about that is, like, if I don't know whether or not the law will end up being retroactive or anything like that, but just something simple as that could put her in prison for 5 years.
Oh yeah, that's true, actually. That's really funny. Her even making that comment could subject her to 5 years, huh?
5 years. 5 years in prison, yeah.
Yeah, I have very strong feelings about enshrining strict religious tenets in your constitutional code, and I don't want to attack Islam because any religion that's completely basically taking over the legal code is a problem for me because I think most religious text at on its face is extremely strict.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you were there's just so many laws and so many different religions. If you're gonna have a criminal code based on them, you're gonna there's you're not gonna be able to follow it. No
Yeah, I
one
mean,
would
and
be able
look,
to
and
follow
I
it.
and look, and I frankly, I find it disgusting that there are, that these codes can be so strict and yet at the same time will allow for honor killings.
Oh yeah, isn't that just the strangest dichotomy you got there? It's like, okay, you have it's just so very prim and proper, but then, oh yeah, if you do anything we really don't like, we're allowed to kill you, and we get completely off
Yeah,
scot-free.
it's really
It's strange.
despicable. In Egypt, three women were killed by 10 of their family members last week. And I think they're probably going to get off under the honor code, but it's such hypocrisy is what it is.
Yeah, it's just Yeah, it's like if you're going to have a criminal code and, you know, have the associated punishments, you know.
I'm just not a fan of the moral police.
Oh, yeah, moral police, absolutely.
They have a religious affairs minister, by the way, in Jakarta, so they're pretty far out there. Apparently, last year, he suggested that miniskirts should be banned.
Well,
That was a month after the House Speaker suggested that women who wear them are to be blamed if they're raped.
Oh, well, then, yeah, that's... I was going to make a joke, but that's insane.
Yeah, no, I mean, these people are insane. By the way, I watched the show Vice on HBO. And
yeah, that's a great show.
They did a segment on Indonesia, how smoking is on the rise there. Like, Philip Morris and all these other companies basically control that country. I mean, they have billboards on everything. Their soccer teams, their schools are sponsored by Marlboro and, like, Camel and the like. And they think smoking cures cancer.
Yeah, I remember reading a case in contracts or whatever, you know, like all the smoke-based, you know, cleaning products, smoke-based, like, healing products, all that stuff is still in Indonesia, and they've just, like, taken it off to, like, a whole nother level, like, you know, blowing smoke in your eye, blowing smoke in your ear, like giving you, like, tobacco rub-downs and massages to, like, clear your body.
Yeah, no, who doesn't love a tobacco rub-down at a massage parlor, you know? Do you want the Swedish massage, or do you want the Philip Morris rub-down?
Yeah, Philip Morris rub-down, please. I'd love one.
Yeah. Will you put the dip crystals in my throat and rub those around?
Yeah, could you use menthol on on my whole body? That would be really appreciated.
Yeah. You know, so just to give you – that was just to give a little context of the country that we're dealing with. If anybody is from Indonesia and can comment on this, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at CALpod, hashtag. You know, tell us your feelings about Indonesian law and their moral code and what direction that country's going in, because it's pretty scary.
Absolutely.
Let's move on to the next topic. I thought this was very interesting. I'm sure everybody's fully aware of the IRS uproar over the targeting of the Tea Party for some special attention.
Yeah.
Well, apparently there's a woman named Lois Lerner who, I guess she worked for the IRS. She was brought before a congressional committee. She was, I think, somebody who leaked some of this info. She was advised to take the Fifth by her lawyers, and she did it in a very interesting way. She first basically pled her case and told everybody that she wasn't guilty and that she didn't break any laws and she didn't violate any IRS regulations. She hasn't provided any false information. And then she said, while I would like to answer the committee's questions, I've been advised to plead the Fifth. And apparently, according to a lot of constitutional law professors and criminal law professors, this is not the proper way to plead the Fifth.
Yeah, as a man studying for the bar, I'm pretty sure that's not how you do it.
How do you plead the Fifth?
I think that you have to just completely say no to talking in court whatsoever.
I think you do it the way – I'm pretty sure you do it the way Dave Chappelle did it from the Chappelle Show. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Plead the Fifth. Fifth.
1, 2, 3, 4, Fifth.
Yeah, that was great. 1, 2, 3, 4, Fifth. I'm pretty sure that was the proper way. That was actually, I think Chappelle did it better than this woman did it.
Yeah, I think that after Chappelle did that, it actually started to pop up in cases that people started mimicking it.
Oh, you think a lot of people were
doing definitely. People like try to pull that off. I mean, if people are trying to pull off maritime law, I guarantee they try to mimic Chappelle with that.
How'd you like to be a judge where just like right after the Chappelle Show came out and you just got all these defendants pulling that?
Oh, God. It would be so frustrating. have to opening statements like, okay, I understand your client might want to plead the Fifth, but please don't let them do it in the way Chappelle did it.
Please don't let them do the Chappelle method.
Yeah, the Chappelle method. Please don't.
Yeah, but I was, you know, and I was reading some of the, you know, some of the people who know the law here. Somebody on the Volokh conspiracy was basically saying you can't testify about your version of the facts and then invoke the Fifth. That's really sort of where it comes down to. But it is a little loose. There isn't a lot of guidance. They are sort of saying that you are allowed to answer certain questions because the invocation is a right not to say anything that can be used to incriminate you. So, you know, you're allowed to say other things that have nothing to do with that, sort of. You're allowed to answer questions. Yeah. You know, you could have 100 questions and 70 of them you could answer that have nothing to do with incriminating yourself.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, it's really just a cut down to, you know, will this question really make me look bad in the case, as opposed to, oh, I'm just gonna plead my whole case and, you know, hope you guys don't have anything to say about it whatsoever.
Yeah. This is not my area of expertise, but it seems to me that her lawyer obviously knew what he was doing.
And at least he should have.
Yeah, you would think. His name's William Taylor III. He's a third. He has to know what he's doing. He's a third generation William Taylor.
Yeah, it's in his DNA at this point.
Yeah, so I would think that, you know, he was probably pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, trying to get away with her stating her case and getting to plead the Fifth, which is nice to have your cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk in general about the IRS targeting of the Tea Party. How did you feel about that?
I thought it was really interesting when I first learned about it. Correct me if I'm wrong. I thought it was just like a single regional office that, you know, said, oh, you know, the Tea Party, you know, places in this area, we're going to target and, you know, get them. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on in Cleveland or wherever it is. Maybe, like, there's some really weird things that are going on with them. But overall, I think that, you know, targeting anyone specifically, IRS-wise, is, I don't think that should happen. But, yeah, I mean, that's, it seems absurd that it was allowed to get to the levels that it did get to.
Yeah, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. I don't generally like any sort of IRS targeting, but I will say is that it's not cut and dry that it's political, because all of these Tea Party groups popped up under these charitable exemptions.
Right.
They're basically trying to use tax loopholes and avoid paying taxes. I mean, that's the whole point of their group, right? I mean, isn't there a whole group about not paying taxes?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not so much that, oh, we're targeting a conservative group. To me, that would be, you know, not acceptable. But for the IRS, a tax collecting group, to go after a tax avoiding group doesn't sound so crazy when you say it like that, does it?
Yeah, no. Presented in that way, yeah, it's not as bad at all. I mean, quite frankly, you know, just the way in these things are set up, you know, it's like, you know, just from my perspective with the charities and everything, you know, it's basically like a safe and legal way to launder money if you really wanted to do it, if you have anonymous donors, you know what I mean? So I can see why they would be like, hey, maybe we should look into this a little bit more and trying to, you know, find ways around the restrictions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very opinionated. I think the tax code needs to be completely overhauled.
Oh,
Citizens United needs to be overturned. And 100%. Everybody needs to pay their fair share and stop letting corporations, you know, basically declare all their money, you know, in some other region of the world, whether it be Ireland or the Caymans. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely.
That's our tax revenue. You're a company here. If you want to, you know, Google or GE or whoever's dodging taxes, you want to do that, just take your whole damn company abroad. I mean, I know that would ruin a lot of jobs, so maybe that could be problematic, but it's just ridiculous to me that you know, trillions of dollars are being avoided right there.
Oh yeah.
And then we're like, oh well, we got to raise taxes on the middle class.
It's like, yeah, oh yeah, that's the way you resolve that, you know.
Yeah. The middle class is the actually ones paying the highest amount of taxes.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on from this, otherwise I'll go off into a crazy liberal rant.
Yeah, I'll email you a soapbox if you want.
Yeah, please do, actually. Why don't you tell us about the topic that's probably nearest and dearest to your heart. I still have mountains of debt.
Yeah. So I saw this the other day. There was a Ninth Circuit opinion about student loan repayment. I guess you can try and get it discharged if you you can't pay your debt. You've tried to pay your debts in good faith, but you have the undue financial hardship. And basically what happened was this guy named Michael Hedlund. He graduated from Willamette Law School in 1997.
I believe it's pronounced Willamette.
Willamette. I actually have a friend that went to it. His way of saying it, he had a little phrase. It's Willamette, damn it.
Oh.
I've never gotten it independently verified if it's one or the other.
Well, if anybody goes to Willamette or Willamette or Will-I-Am-E-T-E, that's my other third pronunciation, tweet us at CALpod, hashtag CALpod, and let us know the proper phonetic pronunciation of Willamette, Willamette, Will-I-Am-E-T-E. Go on with your story, sorry.
Yeah, it's all good. But basically, he then failed the bar exam twice, and then on the third time, he locked his keys in the car. So he was destined to be an attorney at that point, you know what I mean? But he had just a mountain of debt. In 1999, he had $85,000. He defaulted on his loans. So, time goes on, whatever. Comes to court, trying to get it out. At the initial stage, it's basically, did he maximize his income and minimize his expenses? Did he act like a person that's actually trying to repay his loans? And, they basically said, sure, he's doing what he can. But then at the appeal, they looked at it and they said that because there's two things. First, the family had two cell phone plans or two cell phones.
Two whole cell phones.
No information whether or not they were smartphones or anything like that. But
They probably weren't.
And they had two car loans or something, leases or whatever, because, God forbid you are able to get around. And then the district court actually went out to say, I'm going to quote, finally, the court observed that the Hedlund and his wife had chosen to live a single income family, a lifestyle that few today can afford.
How dare they? Stay at home mom.
Yeah, that's really, guys, that's the legal rationale you're going to go to. Oh, yeah. You can't take care of your children. No, you just can't do that.
Meanwhile, as if there's not a cost associated with daycare, as if her staying at home has a cost, because we don't even know that has a cost. I mean, if she goes to work and makes 20 grand a year and has to pay 20 grand in daycare costs, which are extremely expensive, that's a wash anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's like, why are you putting extra stress? You're basically putting it in, that's all nice and good and well that you have your kids in daycare during the day. But then when you get home, both your parents are stressed out. Both your parents are tired. Are you really going to be... Is that really going to be a better situation for him? It's not good. But basically, what it ended up coming down to is the Ninth Circuit said, you can't really look at that. You can't really say you have to have, the fact that you're not having, two means of income. You can't really do that.
What is the deciding line then, right, as it stands now from their decision?
Let's see. What is this? That they couldn't look at his family's.
So it's just about the individual.
Oh, the individual.
I'm asking you. So you're saying you couldn't look at his family's income, his wife's income?
Yeah, they couldn't look at his wife's income. They could only look at the individual himself,
right,
and his attempts to make a good faith effort to pay back his student loans, which, that for a lot of people, I think that spells, really positive opportunity.
This is the best news, I think, in a very long time for student loan, people with excessive student loans who have very bad prospects. Because I know from personal experience that I've been in some really dire financial straits and I've considered filing for bankruptcy, but there's no point because most of my debt is student loan debt. And, the philosophy, the party line has always been that you can't discharge it. You're never going to be able to show undue hardship. And maybe for me personally, I couldn't. But there are a lot of people out there who, you know, probably have gone to a Will I Am at a university and maybe don't have the same job prospects I do. And file for bankruptcy, my man. File.
Oh, yeah. Get it and get somebody experienced. You know what I mean? Get in there and, you know, get as much documentation you can to show how hard it's been on you.
Yeah, and I like that ruling, though, that you can't be like, oh, well, you know, why isn't your wife having sex with strangers for money? Or why isn't your there's a lot of money to be made there, you know, peep show, sex webcams.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even if she's untrained, there's so many opportunities. It's like, guys, let's back off from that. I think you don't want to. Oh, yeah. You want to make that argument? Go right ahead, guys. Yeah, that's going to make you look good.
But even for the individual, I mean, this guy, he failed the bar twice. You know, he was having a hard time getting a job. Yeah. Even if he were to work at McDonald's, like, what is he going to, you know, there's only so much you can do.
Right.
There's only so much you can do. If that's not undue hardship, I don't know what is. So I'm actually really glad about this ruling. I think it bodes very well. Look, I think there's about to be a sea change where it comes to student loan debt, because there's just so many people affected, and it's really sort of destroying the, you know, morale of this country, I think.
Oh, yeah. When, you know, what is it? Just student loans, you know, even coming from college, people are, you know, they have 20 to 50,000, some of them there, and they're just crippled. They're not able to get into jobs, you know, like they're not able to move. They're not able to, you know, find employment in different places that might, you know, be more accommodating to them. And it's basically just hamstringing people across the country.
I mean, for dating, you know, I don't think my girlfriend would have ever dated me if she knew what I was dealing with in crippling student loan debt.
Oh, God. Yeah. I can't imagine having people find out that information.
I think I'd rather her find out that I've been married like three different times, you know, rather than
you probably have less debt at that point. You know what I mean?
I mean, there's a lot of other bad things you'd rather have somebody know than that you're carrying 150 grand in student loan debt that they're welcome to share with you upon marriage.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a idea for a dating website. You know what I mean? Give us your information about your student loan debt and your credit score, and we'll set you up.
You think maybe there should be a site for people with terrible student loan debt? Just date other people with terrible student loan debt?
Yeah, why don't you just combine it together and, you know,
I heard there's like dating websites for people with STDs. Now there's one for Sally Mae. Is Sally Mae destroying your life? Oh, well, meet this girl who also has that problem.
There you go, yeah. You can come together on your and your just utter lack of financial security.
Yeah, the undue hardship site.
Yeah, the undue hardship.
Yeah, that's good, right? That's a good dating website. Well, I think that wraps up the news stories for the day. Let's move on to a little segment that we like to call Good Cop, Bad Cop.
Look, I'm really sorry about that. I just, I saw how aggressive you were being, and I thought, wow, I gotta go even bigger than that since we're doing bad cop, bad cop.
What? No, I said good cop, bad cop. I'm the bad cop, you're the good cop.
Okay, then there it is. That's it. I thought you said bad cop, bad cop.
We'll let you be the good cop this time because it's your inaugural session hosting the podcast. Let's go to Twitter.
Going to Twitter. This week we had Justin Bling tweeted us with the hashtag CALpod. For that, we are, and let's see, do we have somebody else do it too? Mr. Bernard did the same thing this week as well. And for that, they are getting some freebies. They're getting some shirts. So, you know, we really appreciate that. That's pretty awesome.
So, you know, tweet us or email us your addresses. I love that this guy is Mr. Bernard. That's kind of awesome. I was going to play bad cop, but anybody who says his name is Mr. on Twitter is pretty cool.
Yeah,
but
I think
the other, you know, I was a little disappointed in, I saw there was a couple of other people favoriting our tweets, which was hashtag CALpod plus sandwich pick equals free t-shirt. but we got a couple of favorites for that, but it looks like they're actually false accounts. I guess they like, you know, hit on the word free t-shirt. You know what I mean? They're like a bot, because there's this like hot chick named Jin Chin Ginger, and then there's a Dolores Sanssouci. If you're real people, then please, you know, tweet at us again and tell us you exist and you're not just a bot who picked up on the free T-shirt. I hate that. I hate that. Yeah,
but to play good cop real quick, you know, even if they are bots, there's somebody that's set up that bot account, whether it's, you know, a guy that's made 500 bot accounts, they're still a good person. You know, they still, you know, they still put the parameters in to, yeah, okay, I can't really be a good cop for that. That's, they're still bots.
Oh, but it looks like there's another one that's a real person. Kayla.
Oh, really?
Look, Kayla LaScala favorited our tweet. Hashtag CAL pod plus sandwich pick equals free T-shirt. I don't know what our rule was on favoriting. I think we said you had to tweet at us if you want to win a T-shirt. So as bad cop, I'm going to say, Kayla, if you want that T-shirt, I think you got to tweet at us. This week, what did we cover this week about that we asked our readers to? Oh, comment on whether you think there should be a student loan dating website or tell us your Indonesian legal experiences. I think those are your options if you want.
I think that's good. I think that'll give us a good amount of information.
Yeah, so Kayla, we're being a little bit of sticklers, but also we got Jack Quetta responded to us about Tax Convo, so that's nice. Thank you for that. Who else did we add? We added some followers. I think we should give a shout out to the human followers. Go ahead.
Let's see. We have from what I'm looking at, we have the Uniform Bar Exam, which, you know, I appreciate that personally. Mr. John Bro, Tony Biaconti, Diary of a Blue Shoe, and Cardunf. I'm probably mispronounced most of
that. I like that blue shoe. I guess that means like blue shoe law firm, or is that like a fashion statement?
I think it's a fashion thing. Looking at, yeah, this is definitely a fashion thing.
Mr. John Bro, Florida boy, fraternity brother, whiskey drinker, and resort and hospitality major, just working his ass off and enjoying life on the way. Born 92, AVI is me. What does that mean, AVI is me?
Hold on.
Does that mean the image is him?
I do not know.
He wrote, last tweet was, since I bought my car, I drive like 90 miles an hour everywhere I go. Hashtag BMW. John Bro, you are a bad man.
According to Urban Dictionary, it was AVI, you said?
Yeah.
Number three on Urban Dictionary is a violent idiot. Ooh. Don't know. Yeah, that's... AVI, a funny girl who is quite artistic and lovable. Let's see. AVI, one of the greatest people ever born. A good girl hyphen guy. And has linked up with almost every classmate.
Well, maybe that's him. John Bro has pounded out all his classmates.
Yeah, that's an achievement. Most definitely.
I love that we have a follower named John Bro. That actually makes me feel kind of cool. Oh, did you give a shout out to all the other ones? Did you go up the list? There was a bunch more up the.
Let me check it out.
On May 22nd, we picked up a bunch.
Let's see here. Yeah, May 22nd. Who we got here? We got a Blue Tree Legal Contact or Legal Connect. Pardon me. Dietero Comico.
Is that an Italian lawyer? I'm not sure. I hope so.
Yeah, if it is, it's going to make me feel bad because I've horribly mispronounced that. I'm not a...
Anjali looks pretty cool. She's an entrepreneur, lawyer, sidebar trademark host, fashionista, mother, media entrant, free thinker. She actually sounds pretty cool. We may want to interview you, Anjali. Why don't you email us? We might want to interview you sometime on the podcast. Sounds like she's doing some cool stuff.
Yeah, it seems very cool person. Let's see who we got here. We got Howard Gustin. We have...
Whoa, Howard Gustin is the CEO of Capital Logics, building automated trading systems and portfolio construction tools for hedge funds. Uh-oh, I guess he thinks we're doing pretty well. Howard, we're not there yet.
Well, we're getting there.
We're not there yet, Howard. Calm your jets.
Well, you know, you want to get in on as close to the ground level as possible when you're handling hedge funds, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You want to corner the market. Let's see, who do we got here? We got Jonna Baghdadi.
All right, well, that's cool. She's from Lebanon. I like that we're getting an international following. Jonna, welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah, welcome, welcome. Let's see here. We got in the last couple hours, we got Justin Balin. We have Good for Lawyers.
I think it's Justin Blaine.
Blaine. Yeah. Yes, that's what it is. Yeah, pardon me. Good for Lawyers, Low Price Law, and Harmon Law LLC.
Nice, an Atlanta law firm. I like that. No. That's, look, we're branching out. We're blowing up. We're coming for you. Law schools, law firms, bar associations, hit us up. We're going on tour. We're going to be on tour, hopefully, you know, at least 100 dates this year.
Yeah.
So life on the road, man. We'll chronicle it. Matt Storrs is going to chronicle his bar exam studies. And before you leave, why don't you tell us about this interview I'm about to do, because you know this woman.
Oh, yeah, actually, I met her. When did I meet her? I met her, you know, I want to say around February this year. She's a, correct me if I'm wrong, but associate dean at the U of A law school. And she was performing comedy for the Rotary Club, because in Arizona they have the Rotary Club here. They have like a yearly humor, illegal humor competition. And she was, I want to say she finished, I know she finished in the top three, maybe second. I'm not sure.
You won, right?
Oh, I didn't actually. I didn't. I finished third last year. But this year I didn't actually make it to the finals of the competition.
Wait, why did we put you in our group if you didn't?
I have no idea. I was kind of shocked by it myself.
We've made a terrible mistake. We may have to put Nancy in the group instead.
Yeah, I think she's based, you know, obviously with the U of A and everything, she's based over there in Tucson. But yeah, she, you know, even though I only talked to her briefly, I've talked to her online, you know, met up with her, you know, spoke to her on Facebook and everything, and she's just absolutely a delight of a person.
We're about to interview her, so that's exciting. All right, well, Matt, it's been great. I think you did a great job, and you know, well, hopefully our listeners feel the same.
Thank you very much, and thank you all guys. Thank you everybody for listening.
Stay tuned for our interview, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. We have a very special guest on the program today. She is the assistant dean for advancement at the University of Arizona Law School. She also runs a nonprofit, and in addition to that, she's one of us. She does comedy on the side, so we were very excited to find out about a dean that's also doing comedy. Welcome to the podcast, Nancy Stanley.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
So I got to jump right in with the comedy. Tell me how that came about. You know, how long have you been doing comedy?
So I'm old, first of all. I'm like 58 now. And
58 is the new 20. Come on.
58, yeah. Not in my knees.
Never in the knees, but they replace knees now all the
time. That's right. Medicine is our friend.
They told my mother, who's 63, they said, we're going to have to replace your hip. Not now, but probably in the next 2 years. But that's, you know, that's just what everybody does now.
Like, you know, the most depressing thing in my day so far today
is
the fact that your mother is 63.
Oh, that's depressing.
Means you're young.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to start off by making you feel bad.
No. I was getting to the point where I was kind of empty nesting. And, you know, you get to a point in your career and you think, you know, what's new? And my son became interested in comedy, my teenage son. So we went to a Lewis Black concert, a Lewis Black show in Phoenix in 2011. I remember it perfectly. In 2011, February 25th, and he walked out on stage, great opener, John Bowen, he walked out on stage, and I was just struck by the interplay between the audience and the comic, and I thought, I mean, he was great, but I thought, geez, I want to do that. So within like 6 months, I had gone to a comedy camp in New York at the American Comedy Institute, and I had started doing open mic, and just kind of fell in love with it. You know how addicting it is.
Yeah, it's definitely a drug, like crack. It'll send your life into a spiral.
Yeah, and here's the funny thing: even when you're really bad and nobody laughs, it's really exhilarating. Yeah. What's with that?
Yeah, no, it's a tough addiction to get yourself off of.
Indeed.
So Matt Storrs told me that you guys were both in some sort of competition for Arizona's funniest something lawyer.
Well, so the Phoenix Rotary Club, John O'Connor, Justice O'Connor's husband, was for many years a member, and he was known as a really witty, funny guy. He was, you know, that was his shtick. And so on his death, his friends got together and established a prize for the funniest lawyer. And so at the Rotary Club, standing, you know, 6 feet in front of Justice O'Connor and her family, you get up and you do 5 minutes.
Is she a big laugher?
Yeah. Why don't we ask somebody who's argued in front of her? Is she a big laugher? Mm-hmm. No, she's not a big laugher, but she does smile sweetly and she's very polite. I think I actually got her to laugh once.
You got her to laugh?
I think in 5 minutes I got her to laugh once.
Okay, well, I think that's good. I think that's good. I think we're going to go with that. That's really good. How does the university feel, or the students feel? Has anybody from the university seen you do comedy, or the students, or other professors?
Well, the students have seen me do open mic, and every time there are students in the audience at my local comedy club, I'm reminded that I probably should not go blue. Yeah. I'm not the cleanest person in the world, but I'm changing that and broadening comedy a little bit because it limits your venues. But the students have been real supportive, and so have the folks around here. They come out. I booked my own room for a few months, and they liked that a lot, and they would come and visit. So yeah,
that's,
very
that's
nice.
That's really funny. You said you can't go blue. I think it's funny that you're a dean at a law school and you go blue. We are a group of lawyer comics who travel the country to law schools, and that's the one thing we're never allowed to do is go blue when we do these gigs. But here you are as the dean who's saying, you know, I'm the dean, I can do what I want.
Well, first of all, I'm an assistant dean. And second of all, that is my private life. And they're my stories, you know, they're not, or it's my comedy. It's not about anybody else. So, yeah.
Yeah. But nobody gives you any grief at the administration.
Well, I suppose if I ever got well known for my act, they would. Maybe it's just because I'm still a stealth comedian that they don't care.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about what does that mean to be the assistant dean for advancement.
Okay, so there are a lot of assistant deans in the structure of a law school, so I'm one of a number. In terms of rank, it doesn't mean a whole lot, but assistant deans are typically folks who have JDs or who have a lot of experience in, who handle certain areas. I handle advancement, which the way it's done here is mostly public relations, public information, media management, kind of strategic planning, community outreach and support, that type of thing.
So the advancement of the
school. The institution, right?
Of the institute. I see. See, I was unclear. I thought that was the advancement of the students.
Well, I mean, that's what we try to do, advance right. The students, but the institution has to, you know.
How are things at the university? How are things there right now? What's the
Well, of course, you know, we experience exactly what all but a very small handful of law schools have. We have had enrollment declines in 4 years. It's tough for our folks to get jobs, although we've done really well regionally at that over the last couple of years. So that's good. Students still wanting to learn, still happy, still busy. So that's good. But, you know, compared to when I was in law school, they come in a little bit more realistic. I think the external environment is like shaped their expectations. Most of them know they're not going to get out and go to huge, you know, hugely paying big law jobs.
I feel like it's kind of sucked the fun. I mean, I graduated in 05. It was like right. Playful, you know?
Uh-huh.
I feel like it's kind of just in general. Do you sense sort of like that there's not as much of a carefree attitude as you've seen in the years past?
Oh, sure. Because, for instance, you know, people used to go to law school because they thought it was, you know, an interesting thing to do.
Right.
But at these prices, even though we are very low and we just cut tuition, interestingly enough, at these prices, you just can't really afford to make that life choice and say, oh, I want to have this intellectual exercise and I want this to be part of my skill set. You have to really have more of a plan coming in.
Yeah. And on the flip side, I mean, does that mean you feel like you're getting more focused law students?
Oh, our law students are really focused. I I'm not sure. I think the people who self-select to law school are pretty focused to begin with.
Right, but I'm saying, you know, I don't think that used to be the case. Like we were saying 10 years ago, I feel like, you know, a lot of people chose law school because whatever. I don't know what I want to do.
Right, right. In our cohort from the 70s, late 60s and 70s chose it, so, you know, they didn't have to deal with a draft.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's right. And I think that I think they're a little more serious, and they tend to really use their free time to, you know, do clinics and organizations and pro bono stuff and, you know, write for law review. I mean, they're like undergraduates. I know that they're taking on a lot because every opportunity represents a new network or new channel or new potential for them.
Right. Yeah. It's like those high school kids now, just because getting into college, right? It's like they have like 9 skills. They play 4 instruments. They speak 7 languages.
I know. It's really annoying.
Yeah. My brother's got 2 little kids and they're already like, oh, we got to get them prepped for this test to get into kindergarten.
Yeah. You know what they actually said?
I mean, they actually said the phrase, we need him working on his imagination.
Well, and it's so easy to work on one's imagination.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you saying? Just a kid existing in the world should be imagining things.
Well, we can just lament that whole era, can't we? The era of really serious study for kindergartners.
Yeah, no, I feel like it's too bad in some ways that this has happened across the nation for law schools, because I think part of what makes the study of law fun is that it's being done in sort of a stress-free environment.
Really? Would you say law school was a stressful?
No, I just meant like it's stressful, but like you're not thinking about, like, I mean, you're thinking about the law and it's hard and everything, but I mean, you don't have as much external pressure years ago. Now you have so much external pressure on top of that. I meant, there's like a threshold of stress that has now been breached.
That's right. And my favorite conversations, and I still see them, but my favorite conversations around the law school is, you know, like if I walk downstairs, I'm going to the vending machine, we have CNN on the monitors downstairs. And my very favorite thing is when students are kind of all sitting around or standing around and kind of fighting over what's on the television, really the exchange of ideas and the conversations that are around that. And, you know, when you're too focused on what you got to do and, you know, getting this internship under your belt and getting that resume credential done, you don't really, I think, have a chance to do what law school is best at, letting you use your brain.
Yeah, I mean, that's
working
sort of
on your imagination.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, let's use our imagination like my nephew does.
Yeah.
To embrace what's going on at law school, because it is. I mean, we're trying to get you to think in a new way, sort of broaden your way of thinking, which I think is a great thing. You know, I don't want to see people not going to law school.
You know, I was just thinking of that driving in here, that there is so much kind of anti-law or anti-legal education stuff around, but I consider my years in law school to be the best 3 years my brain ever had.
As do I. I don't know about for me.
I wish more people had that. I mean, you can say what you want about the way your careers have played out and work styles and the practice, but I just still think there's so much room and so much benefit to legal education, just as, you know, becoming a good citizen, becoming a better person.
Yeah, no, I mean, I couldn't agree more. And people ask us that, you know, in our group, that's a common question that we get. They're like, oh, you know, why'd you go to law school? Or do you regret it? I go, not for a second. I really, you know, feel that was my path. And I learned so much about who I am as a person, not just, you know,
right,
the things that I learned in the law, just, you know, the way I think about the world, you know, the way I think about certain issues. I feel like I now have an informed opinion on a lot of things that matter. I feel like I can speak intelligently on a wide variety of topics.
And you feel like you can take care of yourself, right? You know, the daily things that kind of are daunting to people, you know, kind of know how to unspool those and help people with those and do them yourself.
Well, also, you know, and for me personally, as a member of the group who lives in Hollywood and works in entertainment, you'd be amazed how much of a leg up it is, because I'm organized and I have a sort of, you know, corporate way of thinking, even though it's the arts, you know?
Right. No, absolutely. Knowing how to unspool a problem and to articulate its issues is really important. I mean, I tell people that I've never, ever felt as smart as the day I passed or I took my torts exam, my very first exam in law school. You know, I mean, that's the day when you think, oh my gosh, you're terrified because you don't know how you did, but think, oh my gosh, I got through that. That was something about just getting through that is, I think, really important and stays with you your whole life.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you went to SIU, you said?
Yeah. I had a really kind of undistinguished undergraduate career that lasted 16 years. So I didn't have a whole lot of options.
16 years? Yeah. I think we're going to need a little bit more info, Nancy.
No, I just kept dropping in and dropping out. Work was always more entertaining. And, you know, one time I dropped out because I couldn't find a parking space the third day of classes. So I just had, I'm a late bloomer.
I love that. Sometimes I won't go to a party because I can't find a parking space. I've never dropped out of school because I couldn't find one.
But think of that, you know, don't you have more incentive to go to a party than you do to Econ 200?
I suppose. I have a cousin who dropped out of school once because he couldn't find his backpack.
See, I understand your cousin.
Yeah, but he never made it back, although it's only been 12 years for him. So maybe
there you go. See, he's got a little more.
I got to tell him your story.
I always like to work, and I had some I worked in a legal services project, like as a field worker for the Association for Retarded Citizens. That's what it was called then.
Wow. It had the word retard in it back then.
It did. I know. Isn't that awful? Now they call it the ARC.
Sounds better, I guess.
But it was really interesting. And we did some class action. We did some class actions for failure to habilitate and, you know, in the state institutions and in deinstitutionalization. And that kind of got me interested. And then I worked in local television for a while.
Oh,
and
tell us.
In the newsroom. Well, I've spent, at various times, about 20 years total working in TV newsrooms. And those were fun.
Where in Phoenix?
I know, just in Tucson. I spent 10 years at the ABC affiliate in news and 9 years at the NBC affiliate in management and news. So.
Oh, cool. We when we were in Arizona doing a show last year, we went on the NBC affiliate over there.
Oh, in Phoenix?
Yeah.
Yeah, good morning show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you like morning shows?
Yeah, well, I like them, except on tour, you know, you usually have to get up at 5 a.m. to do them. So.
But, of course, you went to bed at 10, 10:30.
Right. Yeah, of course. Early to bed. Early to rise. That's how we live our lives on tour completely. And so you were in TV. How did you sort of make the transition then to working at the university?
My kids were getting to the point where I could go back to work full time.
Uh-huh.
So they offered it, and I didn't want to stay at the station any longer. You know, you work in news, TV news particularly, and you get to the point where, I don't know, you just get tired of the game. You just get tired of, chasing today's fire and, having stories that are only a minute and a half that really should take, 5 minutes to explain. So I just kind of, you get to the point where you just want a little change. And I had also, part-time, I had been teaching at the U of A, and I saw that in political science, and I saw that this job came up, and so that's what I did.
Nice. And how long have you been working there?
I've been here for 10 years.
Do you go from assistant dean to dean? How do we get rid of that assistant?
Oh, doesn't happen. I'm not a scholar. The model in American legal education is to have scholars as deans, not just administrators. And I think that's a good one. I think that a dean communicates, the kind of intellectual presence of the institution as well with alumni and outside the house. So, yeah, I think that makes sense. But plus, can you imagine all the headaches? Oy.
Yeah, that's too much stress. What kind of, you don't have to answer this, but what kind of cash does a dean, a full-fledged dean, make?
Well, we'll find out because we're expecting a new dean to be announced in any time now. Here. So, yeah, we'll find out because it'll be public record. And everybody in the building will immediately be going to the record to find out.
Right. I mean, that's really all we ever care about, right? Yeah. How much does that guy make? That's the
question. You couldn't pay me enough. Yeah. I've had some insight into, okay, millions and millions maybe, but that's not going to happen.
Yeah. No. So are we expecting an exciting character to join the University of Arizona Law School?
Well, I don't know. And they've kept it pretty secret. We interviewed four We interviewed four candidates, that the Dean Search Committee recruited, and one is internal, one is external in terms of finalists, and so we're just kind of waiting to see.
Oh, so they might have been recruiting from within the ranks.
Yeah. I mean, we have one internal and one external finalist, so they're just waiting.
Yeah, then they'll have a big announcement. And do you think students care? Is that like a big draw, do you think?
I don't think incoming students care too much. I think what they want to know is that they've got certainty and stability and institutional calm.
Right. You got to give that guy a 10-year.
That's what affects
students. Right. You got to give him a 10-year deal or something.
or something. I think they usually run in five, but
five years. That's good. I'd take a 5-year deal. I would happily be a dean. I'm going to put it out there right now. I'll happily be the dean at any law school who wants me.
I could probably work a deal where you could be dean for a day.
I would love that. If you could work that out, I would love that. We would videotape that. We'd do a little documentary series called Dean for a Day.
Well, let's see how well I get along with whoever it is that's new, and then I'll pitch that idea.
Yeah, I like that. And in return, next time we're in Arizona, Nancy, we're going to put you on our show.
I'll clean up. I'll develop a clean set just for that.
You know what? We don't even care because, I will say she's not a regular member of the group. So whatever she says is on her.
Disclaim me thoroughly.
We'll disclaim you completely. Yeah, we'll see if you can clean up your act a little by then.
Well, I had to clean it up for Justice O'Connor and the Rotary.
Yeah, I did read somewhere that guy was a real cut-up, her husband.
Yeah. Apparently he's funny. So, and here's the best thing. The best thing is I came in third. Now, number one was Bob Howard, and he's terrific. And he's a really established comedian in Scottsdale. He's very good.
Well, he's a ringer. He was a ringer in this competition.
Well, no, you're allowed to. You were allowed to. They didn't have a reason you couldn't. I mean, he's a lawyer. And then I didn't hear the second place guy because they wall you out and you're not allowed to hear the people who went before you. But I kept hearing these huge laughs coming out of the room. So I had to get up, cold after that. So that wasn't very much fun.
No,
but
nobody likes to go right after they're hearing ruckus.
Right. But I won $500, which
what?
Is fabulous. Uh-huh. Bringing the sum total of my income as a comic to $520.
Do you know something? That's actually a really big moment in a comedian's career. I think that moment where you actually have been paid money to sell jokes. And that's, when you talk about like mental hurdles, that to me is a really big one as a
comic. Right. Well, and it offset the thousands and thousands that I paid to put into it.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, that's just the way it goes. But I used to count when I was starting comedy drink tickets as income.
Yeah.
If you count those as income, then you feel a little bit better about your rise.
But of course that means that now I have to go back and all the drinks I bought while waiting in clubs have to count on the other side, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Now I'm really in debt.
What you have to do there is when you see other comics, you go, you get the first round, I'll get the next one, and then you leave before the second round. That's just a little tip that I've learned.
Yeah. Well, I've learned that because it's happened to me so many times.
Oh, you're the person. I gave that advice. So
I'm like the mom, of course.
Oh, right. So they think you got cash to go around.
Because I have a full-time job, right?
Oh, they absolutely believe that. Any comics, when they go, because I used to work as a lawyer in New York while I was doing comedy, man, people would be like, oh, you, how's that lawyer money doing? I'm like, all right, I'll get you a drink, just shut up.
And then they order Jameson's, always. They move from Bud to Jameson's the moment you offer to buy the drink.
Very quickly. So before I let you go, is there anything that you want to promote, or we usually give our guests the floor.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, not prepared for the floor. No, I don't think so. I have nothing.
Didn't you have a charity that you're working with?
Well, I do. And I guess I'll make a more general pitch than that. I work with, I've worked over the past two decades with groups from the former Soviet republics who are kind of ramping up rule of law. And we hear so much about nation building these days and our foreign policy and how nation building doesn't work. But my experience was that for the folks who came over to learn practices and learn about law and write provisions of their constitution that rule of law exchanges like the ABA Rule of Law Initiative, like things that maybe your local bar association does, those are really important. And there seems to be a little bit of drop off in volunteers these days because it isn't top of mind anymore.
It's not as sexy.
Oh, but it is. I mean, once you get into it, it's really interesting stuff.
I agree. I just mean, like, right now, you don't hear a lot of. I think you're right. I think it's amazingly important to have.
Right.
Because otherwise, you know, what you're left with are they just supposed to look around at the countries surrounding them for laws? You know, what?
Right. Which in the stands really isn't such a great idea.
That's where I'm going with this. You know? That's right. Exactly where I'm going with this. I think we want that not to happen.
Right. Right. And I've been able to do things like, you know, the first group I worked with back in 1992 was one of the first groups that came over. And it was a group of lawyers from Russia looking at how to define private property for its constitution. I mean, how much more profound can you get?
Yeah, that's awesome. That
private property. And to think that you have to do research for it and kind of get a grip on the sensibilities of your country, because this stuff has to be organic. You just can't copy ours.
Right.
So it's really interesting work, and I've been really lucky to do that as a volunteer over the last 20 years, and I like it.
So okay, so then we're pushing now for students to start joining these groups.
Yes, and for practicing lawyers.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you have a group in Arizona that people could join on to, or?
Well, I do, but you know, the ABA Rule of Law Initiative, ABA ROLI, is really kind of the best central place. I have not been involved with them formally, but some of their groups have been subcontracted and we've dealt with them. And of course, my friend, Judge John Roll, who died in the shooting in Tucson here in January 2011, was really heavily involved in that and really believed very strongly in it.
He was shot in the Gabby Giffords?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
He died.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But he was a real champion of international exchange between lawyers and judges. And he was working on projects to help people maintain independent judiciaries and set up rules, protocols, and that for anti-corruption and judicial independence. So that's real important. We have a Rehnquist Center here. And if anybody would like more information, I'll be glad to, they can email me and I'll be glad to get back to them about what might be in their area.
Okay, so please do that, people. And don't even get me started on my rants about gun control.
I live in Arizona.
Yeah, that's a topic for another day. But it's been great having you on the podcast. We really enjoyed it.
And, let me come back.
Yeah, and when we're in Arizona, we're gonna. I'm not kidding. We're gonna throw you up on one of our shows.
Well, I'm not kidding. I'll go do it.
I'm very very excited for that. You know, and clean it up a little.
I'll give that a shot.
Yeah. Thanks, Nancy.
Yeah, you're welcome, Matt. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.